Hello, everyone. This is March Twisdale, your producer and host of Focus On. In 2019, I began to plan for my 2020 series of shows. I did so in preparation for the completion and publication of my collection of flash fiction vignettes called Vashon After the Change. It focuses on what would happen to Vashon Island if we were to become supernaturally cut off from the rest of the world for 3 years. Aside from that one event that would separate us and leave us isolated, everything else was meant to match what I would imagine reality might be. And I plan to bring my research into the often forgotten or ignored resources that exist here on our islands, both natural and human, to you and yours. I wanted to bring you a series of interviews with islanders to explore and discuss these resources and our inherent self-sufficiency and vulnerabilities. That was to be the focus of my 2020 series. And so, in January and February, I met with most of the people who manage everything having to do with water on our islands. I met with all of the water purveyors except Gold Beach, the water treatment plant manager, the sewer system manager, and others. They were all gracious enough to bring me along for work calls, offer me site tours, or meet with me multiple times. Now, we exchanged emails, and sometimes they sent me home information to review. And a few of them have joined me here at the Voice of Vashon Studio so that we can share all of this with you. But this was before COVID-19 afflicted millions of individuals, with hundreds of thousands of them suffering extreme illness and death. Indeed, I was exploring water-based resources vital and necessary for those living on this bump of a rock sticking up out of the Puget Sound while Breonna Taylor was still serving her community as an EMT, while Ahmad Arbery was still a healthy, vibrantly alive young man with a love of running and dreams of a good life ahead of him. Now it is June 2020, and I'm going to begin to share with all of you what I have learned from our island's amazing and committed purveyors of fundamental water-related services that you and I and most of our neighbors take for granted. Let me explain why this is absolutely related to the current moment, because I have felt uncomfortable over the last couple of months with the idea of discussing water on Vashon, given all of the global and national events. But right now, we have an issue that needs to be talked about, and has to do with gardening. If you're not aware, the island is bursting with gardening enthusiasm. Most seeds, potato and onion starts, and other gardening amendments have been flying off the shelves or selling out months earlier than usual. Seed providers online are wading through their back orders, with deliveries delayed so long that many, like myself, eventually gave up, canceled those orders, and started shopping locally. That, of course, furthered the depletion of seeds on our shelves, along with the toilet paper. And with this lovely wet spring, Mother Nature has been doing most of the watering for us. But this will all change soon enough. I'm not just a longtime gardener. I have actually been a farmer here on the island. I have sold at the farmer's market, and I have offered a CSA to my community. And I am concerned about the effect that both novice and new, or returning and experienced farming families will have on our shared water supply, on the water pressure, and ultimately on our pocketbooks. The point of gardening right now for many of us is most likely a desire to supply one's family with fresh fruits and vegetables if they run low at the store, which so far they have not, and to save money. We all know that we are at the beginning of this century's Great Depression, and that it will take years, if not decades, to work ourselves out of it, to choose to live differently. And so, for many of us, we are focused on gardens as a way of protecting our families economically. But you need to keep in mind that water costs money. A lot. 5 years ago, when we had our first 90-day drought, which some of you may remember, my garden-related water usage topped $350 over a two-month period. And this was just a family garden. I was not farming or selling to other people at that time. As a result, I stopped gardening. Flat out stopped. And this year, I am back to it. With that extreme water price in mind, and I have some plans in place to try to preserve water as much as possible, which is what I want others to do as well. If everyone turns on their sprinklers and casts water to the wind and sun every evening or late afternoon when they get home, our shared water pressure will drop. Our personal savings will literally evaporate into the sky, and our collective future water prices may rise. So yes, right now is a time to conserve and to seek self-sufficiency in every way possible. Thrift is once again a laudable goal. And growing a beautiful garden has to be about more than throwing vast quantities of resources into it so that you can show your neighbor your glorious tomatoes. It's about having those lovely tomatoes and conserving vital resources at the same time. For the next 2 months, my focus on shows will be about water, water, and water. And now, on to the show. I want to thank you for tuning in to our Island Zone Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSH, as I talk with fellow Islander Jim Garrison, co-owner of Burton Water Company. Jim, thank you very much for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So I'm wondering if you could start off telling people a little bit about the background and the history of Burton Water Company.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Burton Water Company was originally developed in order to serve the women's college that was located on the hill above the town of Burton. They found a spring up on the hill, which is where our system is located now, above Burton, and they made a wooden flume that they captured the spring water in, and they ran that wooden flume all the way down to the college. And of course, as years went by and more settlers moved into that area, people started taking water from that flume for the domestic use. And eventually, the women's college burned down.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and but obviously all the houses were still there, so it was turned into a community water system. And I'm not exactly sure how the water originally developed into private ownership. Perhaps the land that the spring is located on was owned by an individual. But that water company, Burton Water Company, mm-hmm. has been an established privately held or privately owned water utility from the very beginning. And my uncle purchased Burton Water Company from the man who owned it at the time in the 1950s and ran it with the aid of his son and myself and another gentleman for almost 50 years until he retired at about 85.
Right.
Yeah, and I took over, not took over, but got interested in the water company probably 25 years ago. Started working there off and on, and eventually my uncle retired, and I was looking around for a partner, so Evan Simmons joined me, and together we're running the company now, and hopefully passing it on to his son, Nick.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. So you already have an idea of someone who's interested in sort of taking the torch.
Yeah.
Or the water bucket.
The water bucket. Maybe that's a more appropriate way to put it, yeah.
Right. We're going to pass the water bucket.
Yeah. Anyway, he's quite a competent young man, and I think he will do well with it.
Well, and I am finding, as I've been all over the island now, as you know, meeting with a lot of different operators for different water purveyorships, that it is a far more fascinating, complicated, interesting, and yet also has that remarkable simplicity of being all about water. It's an interesting combination of those two things.
Yeah, so, and there's several different kinds of ownership as well. As you know,
right.
Heights is a homeowners association. All the people there in the Heights area essentially own their own water system.
Mm-hmm.
They participate. There's an elected board, and they have manager. But they do not, you know, there's no private person that's in charge. King
right.
County Water District 19 is a quasi-government agency that has different rules even than the Homeowners Association.
Mm-hmm.
And on Vashon, we have two privately held companies, Gold Beach and Burton.
Right. And so, okie doke, so that's interesting. A flume. Was that like open air flume?
No, it was a pipe. It was a wooden stave pipe that was wrapped with wire. So they just made horizontal staves.
Yeah.
And they banded them together into a pipe.
Sort of like a wine barrel.
Like a wine barrel, only horizontal.
Right.
Exactly.
Wow.
And some of that was in use clear up until about the time my uncle took over.
So back then, I'm curious, when the women's college was, that was the early 1900s?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think that they used any form of treatment?
No, I'm almost positive they did not.
Okay.
Yeah, chlorine didn't really come into use until, in the Burton Water Company system, didn't come into use until about 1960.
And it's hypochlorite is what's actually used, I think, by
yes.
all the water
yes.
purveyors on the island.
Yeah.
Okay.
We use a liquid form of that. I think most of them do as well, but I'm not sure.
Yep, mostly I've been seeing the big, and they're all very careful with them because it's such a strong chemical.
Yeah.
It'll
eat up your clothes pretty quickly.
Well, and the damage it would do if it spilled.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okie doke, so you got into this sort of by way of family.
Yep.
And how long have you been a co-owner with Evan Simmons?
Evan and I have been working together probably 15 years, maybe a little more.
So that's when your uncle retired?
That's when my uncle retired, yeah. Shortly after Evan joined the company, my
All
uncle
right.
retired, yeah. But we still depended on him forever. I mean, he had a really good memory. Much
mm-hmm.
better than mine is at this point.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he had a very good memory, and he had a very good filing system for keeping track of everything. The water company has lots of good notes and maps. He recorded everything.
The one thing I've asked all the operators when I say, what's the one thing that you sort of, you know, wish people, you know, knew that they didn't know? And they were like, I just wish they were curious.
It's kind of remarkable to me that I've been involved with the water company as long as I have, and my uncle has too. You know, the combined number of years there's almost 70. We have yet to have anybody stop in and ask us a question.
Wait, you're joking?
No. I mean, there'll be a question that comes in on the telephone about the bills.
Right.
But never a question. The only time we had any interest, for a while there was a high school teacher named Tom DeVries. He's a science teacher.
Yeah.
And he brought several of his high school classes up to Burton Water Company.
Nice.
Just in the study of the water cycle, I guess you would say.
Right.
But I can't think of a single customer who's ever come over just to see what's going on or to call up and say, I'd like a tour of the water company.
So when I called up and asked for that.
You were the first one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And you're not even a customer.
No, I'm not.
So.
Well, that's fast. You know, wow, that really surprises me.
Yeah, it does me too.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your infrastructure. Because let's see, I think you were the third purveyorship that I, and I'm saying purveyorship, everyone, because there are different legal entities or legal structures for all of these, but purveyorship is the fundamental concept. And so I am just so excited. So you guys recently invested in new wells.
Correct.
Why don't we start with that? Tell us a little bit, I mean, about how that went down.
Yeah. Probably when the company first started, the spring water was the source of water. So I'm guessing that somebody just more or less planted a stock tank in the side of the hill. The water flowed into it.
Mm-hmm.
The water flowed then into the stave flume that went down to the women's college, and that was probably the extent of it.
Right.
Over the years, my uncle installed 18 well points, which are simply a 1.5-inch galvanized pipe driven into the ground with a screen on the bottom that allows the water to infiltrate through the screen.
Only at the bottom. It's not perforated with holes along the length
No,
of it.
it's only perforated at 3 or 4 feet from the bottom.
Okay.
So the pipe is driven into a sand area where there's water.
And that's down the hill where we went down towards the big giant holding tank area
Correct,
too.
correct.
Okay. I'm calling the swimming pool. What do you call that?
Well, we call it a reservoir
The
or
reservoir. Right.
in-ground water tank.
Okay. So down near the reservoir, so we walk down there and there's this beautiful, lush, it's not a wetland because you don't have pooling water, but it has that feeling of being a non-pooling wetlandy area, boggy area. What
Yeah,
would you call it?
it's very boggy, yeah.
Okay.
And we have our favorite plant, the skunk cabbage, there.
Lots
Lots
of
of it. Yeah.
anyone who wants some skunk cabbage, I think, can call you up and you're willing to share.
Or watercress, actually.
Okay, there we go. Hey folks, there you go.
Lots
A
of
reason
watercress.
to call and to visit.
Yeah.
So those well points that were drilled that were put in by your uncle, are they this literally the same pipes right now, or do you replace the pipes over time?
They are the same pipes that have been in there since 1955.
Wow.
I mean, some of them were planted later, 55, 60, 70.
Right.
Evan and I drove some as late as the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But the health department doesn't particularly like that form of extraction because in order to get the water out of those pipes, you have to put a pump downstream from those wells. And so you're applying suction to those pipes.
Right.
If those pipes break and drop into the dirty water, the pump doesn't know that and just keeps pumping dirty water into
Okay.
the system.
But you haven't had problems with that lately,
Well,
or?
we very carefully monitor those pipes. Every year we're inspecting them and clearing them out and making sure there's no damage.
Got it.
But we're replacing those with drilled wells, which have a surface seal. They go down about 50 feet and they are much better protected, and they have a well pump at the bottom of the casing of the well. So the water
Interesting.
is pushed rather than being sucked on. So if the
Interesting.
pipe breaks, it just means the water spills out onto the ground
Okay.
rather than being sucked up from a pipe below the break. So they're a
Okay.
lot safer. The health department
Is happier.
is happier.
Okay.
But the cost of them is, $20,000 for a well
Each.
each
Yep.
versus $2,000 for a well point. And they actually only deliver about twice as much water. So the cost benefit isn't great, but the health benefit is.
So you've got this boggy area, and let's talk a little bit about the impact that human beings have upon their environment when we live above and beyond the standards of another animal. You can have humans living maybe the way they did 35,000 years ago, and their impact on the water and their environment would probably be very different than we're doing it right now. So that water, though, is in a way, it's still fluidly a part of the environment. It's not like some people, need a 400-foot well. It's way down there, surrounded by, just hundreds of feet of rock. There's no living creatures down there except maybe some little microbes. And basically, that water isn't going to get drunk by a deer or, swam in by a fish or anything. But you guys, the water that Burton Water Company is accessing is still a fluid part of the living environment. And so when you take that water out of that boggy area, it is not going to migrate naturally and flow through the environment and feed and keep wet any part of the environment because it's being taken out and sent off to houses.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we're basically diverting surface water before it becomes surface water. But
Okay.
just downstream from our wells, the land is falling away fairly sharply there. And originally, the springs that come out there at the base of that slope is what was captured by
Right.
the people to use the women's college.
So you know that your water that is not diverted by the Burton Water Company is going to fairly soon reemerge and be a part of the ecosystem that the animals and the plants and the insects all depend upon.
Correct. Yes, it's
Okay.
very it's just the headwaters basically of the creek that comes out down at the base of the highway there at Burton, as you drive to Tahlequah.
When it comes to this concept of conservation, of resource conservation, human beings are having an impact on their local environment based upon how much water they use.
Correct. Yeah. If you're a Burton Water Company customer, you are basically moving that water from its ecologic use as a spring down to your septic system or watering your plants or whatever you're doing with it. But you are moving that water from its original ecological use to a human use. And I'm not trying to attach weight to it or anything, but it is changing the environment of that swamp. If we had too many Burton Water Company customers, that swamp there that has a huge ecological use would dry up. So it's the impacts of humans on that whole ecosystem there, that stream and headwaters and swamp and spring are creating. It's pretty hard to for us to calculate what the effects are of removing that water. You can imagine the volume of water. It's a little hard to imagine, though, which caddisfly or which bacteria or microbe within the system is affected by the water that you've removed. You know, that's a harder calculation.
I mean, sure.
How do you know how many nutrients are being lost because the water flow is less at the mouth of Fisher Creek where it comes out into the outer harbor? Those kind of calculations become difficult.
Right. The farther away you get, the harder it is to extrapolate, I think. Yeah.
Right.
So in California, for example, the Central Valley of California was sort of like what the Nile was like for Egypt. So it was a huge flood zone. And so you would have a couple of rivers that meandered, you know, from the Sierra Mountains and eventually made their way down to the ocean. And as they went through there, they would flood out and then they would dry up and flood out and dry up. And that was what Europeans discovered when they first arrived. And now if you're in California, you'll see these very carefully created cement canals. There's no more flooding at all, you know, and everything is very narrow movement of water. And then it shoots off and is sprayed off into farmland.
Right.
That seems to me to be almost an easier visual for people because it's a river that's been confined.
Right.
But here on Vashon, it's harder to see it because it's almost traveling underneath us. It's traveling past the roots of the trees. And it's that surface water concept that until it comes together into a stream, we may not realize how much water moves beneath us.
Correct. Yeah. It's a tremendous amount. And humans at this point are taking a relatively small amount of it. But we still don't know what impact that has and where you get to some kind of tipping point that it's too much.
Right.
That's a very hard thing to anticipate.
Right.
You know it. You'll know it after it happened.
Right.
Now are seeing other climate changes and other ecological changes after they've occurred.
But what's the point of recognizing that, oh, wow, maybe it wasn't such a great idea to pull out the preserved sunlight of millions of years in the form of oil and coal and whatnot and to burn it all in the space of 150 years. If we recognize that that was a mistake, then the question is, can we take that lesson forward and apply it right now and practice conservation before the disaster happens?
Right. That's would be the hope. That would be the happy ending to the story.
Yeah, the actual learning curve.
I don't know that we will, but we can try.
So let's talk a little bit about what people, there's conservation, simply using less, and then there is preserving the cleanliness, the purity, the safety of the water. And in the process of doing that, since the water is sort of everywhere, there's also the idea that if something is going to hurt the water, it's hurting the plants, the insects, and the animals along the way. Right. What are some things that people can do differently or do less of in order to help protect their future access to potable water?
Well, a big thing is obviously contamination. On Vashon, there are many, many people who use surface water. I mean, Burton Water Company is, the water that we sell is not classified as surface water, but it's very near the surface. Our aquifer lies under Misty Isle Farms,
mm-hmm.
and almost anything they do on that land affects us. A number of years ago, we had an incident there where there was a heavy fertilizer use. They were trying to grow hay to feed their cattle,
mm-hmm.
and they were actually pasturing their cattle on their fields, which they have a right to do, but it was starting to elevate the nitrate levels in mm-hmm. the water that we were drawing for our customers. So it was a pretty direct and quick response. I mean, this thing happened, that nitrate started rising and was getting alarmingly high within a matter of a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clear to me that on Vashon, you can affect your water in your area quite dramatically by anything you do on the surface. Now, people who live down near the water, the mm-hmm. sound, are pretty distant from any water that we drink on Vashon. But all of us who live up on top of the island can easily affect the water that a lot of us are drinking.
Right.
So I think it's very important
right.
to be careful.
If you're at the end of the stream, then you can only affect the cleanliness at the end of the stream. But if you're at the headwaters.
If you're at the headwaters, which all of us are who live up on the higher elevations.
Right.
Everything we do has the potential to impact the water systems and the drinking water that we take. And I'm particularly concerned about herbicides and pesticides because many of these products are extremely toxic and mm-hmm. some of them are quite long-lived.
And fertilizer.
And fertilizer.
So I heard something about this. I moved here 16 years ago, and I can't remember who mentioned it, but someone was telling me how important it is to really take care of the water, and they mentioned fertilizer, and they mentioned the story about Misty Isle. And I also heard in the context of that that Misty Isle stopped taking those actions, and that fairly quickly after they stopped, the water became cleaner. Did that also happen?
Yes. Misty Isle actually turned out to be a pretty good neighbor. They paid for a lot of water testing over a period of about 10 years, and they discontinued the type of fertilizer that they were using. They went into started using a slower release fertilizer, so the plants have more of a chance to take up the nitrogen.
So you don't have to apply as much of it.
You don't have to apply as much.
Right.
Well, yeah, I don't know how quantities work, but mm-hmm. it's slower release so that it doesn't get so easily into the water system.
Right, the plants grab it.
The okay. plants grab it.
Got it.
So they were actually pretty good, and they did discontinue grazing as well on the property, and
mm-hmm.
our nitrate levels they haven't returned to the background levels they were at before they started using it. But they have been reduced dramatically.
Nice.
Originally, we had about 0.5 parts per million. During the height of their activity, it went
mm-hmm.
up to 8 parts. So a huge 40%, mm-hmm. 40 times
mm-hmm.
increase in nitrates. And now it's back down to about 2.5.
Well, now, that's one thing that I think we all need to keep in mind every second that we're alive on this planet, and that is that Mother Earth is incredibly regenerative. There's just such good evidence that when we stop contributing additional harm, the planet does begin to heal.
Well, and we're lucky here. We have a perfect climate in the sense that we get just enough rain
mm-hmm.
to make everything clean and fresh. Things grow like crazy.
Right, consuming those breaking things down, mushrooms.
Yeah.
I mean, we're lucky. Don't they say, like, I think mycelium and mushrooms are viewed as one of the great cleansers
yeah.
of, yeah,
yeah,
we got that everywhere.
We have those everywhere, thanks to our forests. I mean, that's
right.
That's what we have. We have terrific ability to grow trees here, and it's a blessing. I can't emphasize that enough, the importance of trees.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, my family, I'll share this quick little story. We got Christmas trees when the kids were younger, and it always bothered me, but I couldn't quite talk myself and my family out of it, and there's all the justifications, and we tried a plastic tree one year, and my my whole family just sort of looked at me like I turned into an alien. So that wasn't going to happen. And we didn't buy that. We borrowed that because I didn't want to buy one and contribute to,
Plastic. Yeah.
So we were like, all right, okay. You know, but still, it's the death of a tree. That always made me feel bad. And then this last year, we finally, something happened. And this is a shift, I think, that has to happen. Not just before we can change how we act, we have to change how we think and how we come to decisions. And so I won't go into why, but we made the shift and I went out and I bought 4 baby trees, and 3 of them are one type of a pine and one's another one. And we put them on our porch and we just decorated the porch with lights, because there's the idea of bring a living tree into your house, but the living tree hates being in your house. Right. They're miserable. They're not happy about it. Yep. So we just decided to not have a Christmas tree in the house, but we have this beautiful sliding glass door to our porch right there. And so we had lights out there, and we had the trees out there, and then we're now planting them. And I'm like, why? 20 years ago, I don't know why I didn't decide to plant a tree for Christmas instead of kill a tree for Christmas.
Right. It's a win-win. I mean, you get the trees, and I think the idea of planting trees for Christmas instead of taking them down would be a really nice tradition.
Is there anything else specific that you would like to share with Vashon Islanders with regard to water?
Well, I encourage people to conserve water. It's problematic for the water company in that the less water you use, the less revenue we have. So we're always caught in this between a rock and a hard place as to whether to sell water or help you conserve it.
Right.
But I think it's a good idea to not use more than you need.
Mm-hmm.
The plants and the animals and the fish who depend on the water, the overflow of the aquifer where we are, will thank you for that. And I think it just makes Vashon a better place when you just use what you need and not waste it.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Voice of Vashon on 101.9 FM, KVSH. My name is Marge Twisdale, and I am your host today here on Focus on 2020. This interview is going to be all about water here on the island, because we're focused on the resources and resiliency that we have, both natural and human. So today, I am looking forward to talking with Jim McRae. He is the guy who's going to answer a lot of our questions about how we get water to come out of that faucet in our kitchen sink. Jim, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well under the circumstances.
Right, exactly. So just for people who are tuning in, we are currently recording this show in the middle of the social isolation moment, mid to late March. It's going to probably come out in about a month or so, so this may be a little bit outdated, but some of our comments may reflect this very important time in our current history. So let's see here. We are going to cover a lot of issues, but first I want to make sure, Jim, that people know who you are. So can you take a minute to ground them in who you are, what you do, and so on and so forth?
Sure. I'm the general manager for Water District 19 here on Vashon. I've been a Vashon resident for just under 20 years and love the island, consider myself an islander, even though I wasn't born here or schooled here. I come from the South, the United States, grew up in the South, and left at the earliest opportunity.
okay, sorry.
I have a Bachelor of Science in Engineering, and I went back to school as an older person and got my MBA in Sustainable Business. So I love education. I love engineering and physics, and water has just been something that I have enjoyed working with, and I've been with the Water District for about 2.5 years.
Let's go ahead and dive into some of the details related to District 19. And some of these are going to cross over with other water districts on the island, water purveyors, and some of them are not. But I know that there are people I've talked to who are involved with other water purveyorships on the island. And they are, how do I put it? It's almost like you guys are a family, like a bunch of cousins. And you all sort of have a sense of what the other people are doing at the other part of the island. And so this is important to everyone on Vashon, not just people who are in District 19. I'd like to talk a little bit about gravity, just to get off the board. Explain to everyone who's listening right now why gravity actually matters and how it matters.
Yeah, most every water district uses gravity to move water through the pipes. We're no exception to that. We have, depending on where the source is, whether it's a well or whether it's a creek, we have to pump it out of the ground or out of a creek. And in our particular case, at the top of 103rd, just off of 188th, we have three large wells and two large storage tanks. So we have to pump the water into the tanks, and from the tanks, which the tallest one's about 86 feet, that sets the water pressure for the district, because the water in the tank is a gravitational force that allows it to move all the water down through the main part of the town and into the remainder of our district.
So when we're talking about that pressure, because in my own head, I was sort of like, well, wait a minute, because I live in Westside Water District. And I was like, well, you know, it's not like all the houses are just in this perfect cascading, you know, every house is lower than the next house than the next house. We got ups and downs all over the place.
I mean, in general, the physics is for every foot of elevation, you generate about 0.433 feet of pressure. So if you take our 86-foot tank, we have about 30 pounds of pressure that we try to pressurize the system in. That's kind of the standard that we have.
Here's another thing, and everyone else probably already thought of this, so I will raise my hand as the person in the room who probably is the only one who didn't get this. I've been fascinated as I've gone around the island, having tours with all these different water operators, to be going down really close to the coastline a lot of times when it comes to where the water is, and realizing that it's because it's gone through the whole island, down all the hills, and that that's where a lot of the water is captured, and then piped way, way back up to the top of hills to fill these giant towers, and then gravity from there goes out to all the houses. Now, that in and of itself caught me completely off guard.
To me, it's a fantastic journey. I mean, we put water in tanks for a couple of reasons. One, not only to set the pressure, but in the event of a fire or something like that, whether you need a large amount of water, part of that water is designated as fire storage. So since Vashon, the town, has burned down twice, our little tank on the hill that will hold up to 1 million gallons is very key to making sure that public safety is considered.
And I didn't know Vashon had burned down even once, much less twice. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, there's some fabulous photos, I think, in the Heritage Museum you might want to take a peek at sometime.
Oh, right, right. Okay, folks, you can go there to check out some of the water history, and we're going to go ahead and dive into a few more questions. Let's dodge to, I guess, potentially high-stressful question, just let you get that out there, talking about water units or water shares. Really quickly, let people on the island have a sense of what's going on with availability for people who want to develop new projects and why the waiting list is handled the way that it is.
Okay, so we produce, like all other districts on the island, produce a finite amount of water. We don't have an infinite supply or an endless tap. And so what we do is we estimate how much water we can produce in a consistent manner. And we kind of divide that up into, I think in the old days they called them shares. We tend to call them water units. And then so for our particular district, we have a certain number of water units, and all of those are in, I won't say in use, but they all are owned by people. Some people have multiple units. Most places, especially residential units, only have one water unit. Mm-hmm. And so we have not been issuing new water units or shares in quite some time. We've been in moratorium for the last 15 or 20 years. We have a waiting list now because our production has increased a little bit, and we are trying to fulfill the 55 people on that list who are waiting for water units. So it's not like you can just walk in and pick up a water unit.
Right, and you said there's been a moratorium for 15 to 20 years. So that means that, like, person number one on that waiting list might have actually been waiting that long?
Yeah, that is correct. They have been waiting since the waiting list was established.
Okay, so there hasn't been, like, an on and off. You didn't, like, take a moratorium and then add some more. Literally, so a new person, for example, falls in love with Vashon. They love it. They want to develop within the District 19 region, and then they're told, we're sorry, you have to go on a, you're number 56 on the waiting list, and they're a little bit horrified and shocked, but this is reality.
Well, actually, it's worse than that because the waiting list has been closed for a number of years, so there's no, if you come into Vashon, you want to buy a piece of property, and the property does not have a water unit associated with it, then you don't get on the waiting list. There's really not an option for you.
Okay, within District 19 specifically.
That is correct. I can't speak for all the other water districts because they all have different situations.
And some people would say, oh, gosh, golly, just, you know, go drill a few more wells. I think a little bit more goes into a decision about when to drill a well. Why don't you speak a little bit about some of that? And also, I believe you guys have a well that it might pump out water, but you've decided not to use it for a very reasonable reason.
Sure. Yeah, just in general, I mean, you're dealing with state regulations if you want to drill a well, and there are a number of private wells on people's property on Vashon Island, generally because they live outside of a water district, or they did when they bought the property. And so there are a number of private wells, and as long as you can get a water right from the Department of Ecology, the Washington Department of Ecology, and then work with the Department of Health to make sure you operate it correctly, then you can do that. But that is, I know, a fairly onerous process, and I can't tell you if there are how many permits they're issuing or if they are, but there are not a lot of wells that, to my knowledge, are being drilled in the last number of years. So, but remember, a lot of property in Vashon has water units or has water available, and people just have not developed it. So,
okay, and you guys at Water District 19, you have a number of wells, as you said. I think are there three in operation specifically up by the towers right now?
There are three up at the top of 103rd Hill. There's also one at Morgan Hill, which is on 216th. Mm-hmm. And we have a small well that used to be a community well called Vashon Meadows. And then we have the Beale well, which is the well that we do not have connected to the system.
Right, right. So that's the one that I believe has arsenic in the water.
That is correct. I wasn't here when that was done, but I know that was quite a surprise. Sometimes you just don't know what you get until you actually open it up. And so the Beale well is capable of producing about 80 gallons a minute, which is not a bad volume. And we do not use the well. It's not connected to the system at this point. Mm-hmm. The design was that if we needed it in an emergency, we could blend it with the water coming through the water treatment plant and use it, but we've never done that. I have my operators make sure it's operable, and they will occasionally run it and put the water on the ground. It does not go into the water system. But like I say, if it was an emergency, we would certainly consider bringing that if we could not meet demand.
Right. So that well, when it was first brought on board, was never actually used to supply water to the population.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Must have been a disappointment. I am sorry that happened.
I think more than a disappointment, it's certainly a financial calamity. And, you know, it's like I say, it's, you know, water's precious. Mm-hmm. And if you drill a well, you certainly want it to produce. It's not an inexpensive proposition.
There is some mixed opinions out there, and I'm not sure there is an actual solid answer to whether arsenic contamination in the groundwater on Vashon Island was a naturally occurring event, or whether it is the long-term outcome of the Asarco plant pollution. I'm wondering, do you have additional information about that?
I have opinions, but they're not necessarily based in fact. arsenic is naturally occurring, and, you know, I live in an area where we have some contamination from the Asarco plant, so I don't have an informed opinion on that.
So there's no final answer on it. That's pretty much what most people have been saying. They're like, we're not sure. But regardless, I think it's really wonderful to know that two things, actually, that the well is there. If there was a huge fire event and a whole bunch of the water got pulled out of the tower for some reason in a short-term emergency, it sounds like you have the potential to fill that tower back up for the security purposes. But I think it's really laudable that in multiple years since it was first opened up, that it's never been used. Obviously, there's regulations out there, but there's also the decision to err on the side of caution, it sounds like.
And we are, because in truth, the amount of arsenic that's in it is below the maximum contamination limit, what we call the MCL. So we could run it, but we've chosen not to.
All right. So let's go on and talk a little bit about what surface water is. I would love it if you could explain to people how very, very rare it is that surface water is used on Vashon Island. I may interject with some thoughts on how amazing that water treatment plant is, but you just go ahead and talk surface water for a minute.
Yeah, that's really the biggest difference between the other water purveyors on the island and Water District 19 is we are the only purveyor on the island that uses surface water. All the other companies rely on their wells, and we also need a quantity that we can't necessarily get from just the wells. And so we have two small creeks on Vashon where we actually take water out of the stream.
Mm-hmm.
And one is called Beale Creek, the other is Ellis Creek. And once you take water out of the stream, you have a very expensive process ahead of you of making sure that you can clean the water from any animal debris or any feces or other material. So you're talking about a multi-million dollar plant to do that.
Right. And that's right there at the corner of where Bank Road turns into Beale Road.
At that little triangle.
All right. So for people who have been driving by and wondering what that big, interesting building is, that is a surface water treatment plant.
Correct. And right. I had driven by it probably for 18 years before I knew what it was, too. So.
Right.
So, no shame there.
So when we went to Beale together, didn't we, you and I?
That is correct. We went to Beale Creek.
Okay. And I am so excited about a project that you guys have that you're in the middle of applying for funding for, and it's a little bit hard to know what's going to happen in the year 2020 with all the surprises that we're facing so far, but still, it was so exciting. Why don't you tell folks what it is that you guys would like to do with the water catchment section that you have on Beale Creek?
Right. Anytime you're drawing water from a creek, you wind up. A lot of the water passes through the creek. You have to maintain a certain flow through the creek itself. But some water is pulled aside, and then we use that to pump it up to the water treatment facility there on Soper Road. And we put it through the filtration process. One of the things that when the water takeout when that pumping station was put in is that it did not allow for fish passage because there is a section of it where the creek is dammed. We can run water through it, obviously, to keep the flow going in the creek, but it doesn't provide for fish passage. And so about 2 years ago, we invited the Department of Fish and Wildlife to come out and look at what we were doing and ask them for suggestions on how we could restore the fish passage at Beale Creek where we are taking out the water. They referred us to an engineer, and he came up with about a $200,000 project that would allow us to restore the fish passage and actually improve the operations where we're drawing the water out of the creek. So it competes with a lot of other projects that we have. A lot of projects to replace some of the old mains, which
right.
can cause some coloration in the water from time to time. And so we have put forth a proposal for some grant money. The board has been very generous on that, and as we work through that, if we can get a sizable grant to cover maybe 50 to 75% of the cost, then we would love to get that project started. It's been kind of a pet project of mine since shortly after I arrived here.
I have found the entire experience. I've spent almost a month and a half now going around and having interviews with different operators and having tours. And I think you'll appreciate this. I find the whole system to be so amazingly mundane in that there's this high-tech side to making sure that the water, you know, gets out to all the houses, it's clean, all this other stuff. But there's these pieces of it. There's these parts of that system that are just very low tech in a way. And that was very exciting for me in a way. It made me feel actually a little bit closer and a little bit more relationship connected to the water. It didn't feel like it was like set off in the middle of some super fancy system. It was still holistic or real, I guess, in a way. So when we were down there at the creek, and we were, you know, checking out that whole system, what would you say? It's about maybe 22 feet of distance of that very long creek is actually the sum total of your footprint. Would you agree?
As far as the water goes, I think that's probably a pretty good estimate. Yeah.
It's like a small little footprint, and yet from that, underneath the earth, through pipes, all this water moves against gravity. So talk a little bit about the pumping. How much energy does it take to get water to then go against gravity? And how much are you guys set up in the event of a big emergency that would impact electricity and things like that? What about generators and backups to make sure the pumping keeps working?
Right, and the truth is, we don't have emergency backup for the creek sites, primarily because it takes a significant amount of energy to run the plant, and even more energy to pump the water up to 200 or 300 feet that's required to get it up to the water treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
The gravitational forces against that are pretty high, so we spend a fair amount of money just pumping water up the hill so we can process it.
Okay.
And as you remember from your tour, there are quite a number of very large pumps in the treatment plant that moves the water through the treatment process as well, and then into the system. So we're not able to back up with the generator the creek sites or the water treatment plant.
So you're saying that's a higher energy using piece of the system?
Yes, it is.
So you don't back it up, and in the event of an emergency, you would fall back to the other wells?
That's correct. We have a diesel generator at our well site, and it's capable of running all three wells and the machinery, the pumps necessary to move it up into the tank. So we can maintain operations for as long as we have fuel.
Do the wells actually supply an amount of pressure themselves? I know some of the well points, for example, it's almost like the water wants to move from the earth where the pressure is greater through the holes into the pipes. And so with the well points, I believe sometimes if you were to like take the tube off the hose that the water runs into, take that off and just look at it, like water would spurt up out of the well points. Do you have the same thing going on with the larger wells?
Oh, we don't, no. I mean, the artesian effect that you're describing is not something that we have the luxury of, which we did, but no, it takes our wells are several hundred feet deep. It takes very large pumps to get it up, and then we have to pump it up into the tank so that we can for storage.
All right. There you go, folks. Lots of interesting stuff going on in the world of water for District 19. So everyone who, you know, just presses that button on their washing machine and water flies in and the clothes get clean... There's a lot going on in the background. In the last couple minutes we have, let's talk just briefly a little bit more about that surface water treatment that goes on. Just sort of give people a sense of what is done to take creek water and make it safe and reliable for their use?
Right. We run it through a two-stage filter. The first phase, the third stage of that is called a clarifier, where we force the water through a aggregate material, and we scrub it. We try to knock as much of the I won't call them contaminants, but the particulates that are in the water, and then we push that through there. We have to periodically stop the process long enough to clean the filters to get the material that's come out of the water.
Right.
But after it comes through the clarifier, you may remember it runs through a trough, and then it uses gravity again to flow through another set of filters before it's actually released into what we call a clear well, which is a clean well, concrete well that's underneath the building. And there is where we will treat the water. We will chlorinate it, if we're required to do so. And from there, it flows into the water system. So it kind of traverses quite a bit of length before and filter material before it actually gets into the water system. And we have not only chlorination standards, which all the other water operators on treatment plants, water purveyors have on Vashon.
Right.
We also have a what we call turbidity, which is basically water clarity, and we have very stringent guidelines on how clear that water must be or can be before we put it into the distribution system.
So how many water operators work for District 19 right now?
Right, we have 3 full-time operators, and we have a part-time operator. We are in search of a treatment plant operator at an advanced level right now, on level 3 or 4. But the truth is, there is a lot more automation. There's a lot more control systems out there that, for me, is kind of is a lot of fun, because there's a lot of technology now in making water. There's also a lot of, if you like physics, if you like math, there's just a lot of opportunity to use those portions of your brain. And I like the fact that we can keep people with clean water.
Well, and if I understand correctly, this is a field that's seen a fair number of people who retire out, and yet we've had a big cultural push towards young folks just going off to college. And the trades, I think, it doesn't matter if I'm talking to a plumber, an electrician, or a water operator. We need young folks to pay attention and learn this stuff and step up to the job.
I think that'd be awesome, and I would just say to them that, you know, there's a lot of technology. You don't have to go to Silicon Valley to find it.
Well, I want to thank you, Jim, for doing what you do. I know you work very hard, and so do the operators in your district, and I've been impressed with every single person I've talked to who takes it so seriously, this vital, life-giving work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that those words.
Yeah.
Mark, very, thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me. Folks, you've been listening to Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSH. This is Focus on 2020. My name is March Twisdale. I am your host and producer of this show.